Let the games begin. We have in attendance Senators Adams, Miller, Green, and Taylor. What a crew. SB 4, an act allowing a person under the age of 21 to be arrested by a peace officer without a warrant for illegal possession or consumption. Fantastic piece of legislation. I know the author.
Well.
We've already had a hearing on this, haven't we?
No,
we,
sir. No.
We haven't?
We forget.
Okay.
To move it up.
Oh, you do. That's a
right. Well, we got a sponsor statement in the packet we can read through.
Yeah. I read it too.
Four. Oh, you want to give us a rundown on Senate Bill number 4? This is very similar to the legislation, by the way, that we worked on last year, and actually spent quite a bit of time on it last year, if I remember.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Ambrose. I work for Senator Taylor. Senate Bill 4 would make drunk driving a felony on the third offense within a five-year period, requires a minimum sentence of 360 days and a $1,000 fine upon conviction. It would also require a sentence of not less than 30 days and a $1,000 fine if a person convicted of felony DWI later drives a vehicle while that person's license is suspended or revoked. This section is new to the bill this year and was added at the suggestion of law enforcement agencies, which have a horrendous time with folks that insist on driving even after a license is suspended or revoked. This would put some teeth into enforcing that. SB 4 also gives the court the option of ordering a person to take antabuse or a similar drug as a condition of parole or probation. These drugs are intended to prevent the consumption of alcohol. The court may also order forfeiture of a vehicle or aircraft involved in a drunk driving offense, subject to remission under existing law. The need for SB 4 is clear. In 1994, Anchorage had made 351 DWI arrests by August 24th. Of that total, it was the second offense for 102 of the drivers and the third or more offense for 48 of them. The breath alcohol counts of most of these offenders is staggering. One driver who already had 7 DWIs on record had a BAC of .267. We're all aware of the high-profile cases, the guy with a multiple DWI who wipes out a family. Every one of these repeat offenders would be, SB 4 would help get every one of these repeat offenders off our roads and highways. The goal of SB 4 is to get kill, they maim, and they destroy property. The impaired driving assessment conducted by a technical assistance team from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in Alaska this fall revealed that alcohol-related motor vehicle crashes carry an annual price tag of nearly $32 million. The human cost, the grief, and the destruction of families is impossible to calculate. Section 1 of the bill addresses only a change needed in state law to overcome a court ruling that a minor cannot be arrested for consuming alcohol unless the police actually witness the consumption. That ruling is currently in effect in the First Judicial District. That's everything from Juneau down. Section 1 of the bill would add minor consuming to the list of offenses for which an officer may make a warrantless arrest. The remainder of SB 4 deals strictly with what is needed to make it a felony to repeatedly drive drunk. It would give Alaska one of the toughest drunk driving statutes in the nation and send a clear message that it will no longer tolerate those who cannot or will not stop this behavior.
In this piece of legislation, I'm trying to find all the fiscal notes to this. Is it true that this piece of legislation would cost an amount of maybe over $4.2 million, of which $3.7 would be corrections? I'd like to see your floor plans of the number of prisons you're going to build. You're going to have to do something with this piece of legislation.
Senator Adams, the fiscal note from corrections totals $3.7 million plus in the first year.
Then to the chairman, Mr. Chairman, is normally in a spending plan you'd put the amount of money you're going to spend on new legislation. Has the Senate majority put the total amount that they would like to spend?
We only got the governor's budget yesterday or day before, so we haven't quite got around to that yet. You raise an interesting policy question, though, Senator Adams, and I appreciate it. Too often, and maybe this will be one of those cases, we allow the fiscal notes of the department to drive the policy that the legislature is going to enact. In other words, if it costs too much to pick up felon repeat drunk drivers, then we might as well let them go ahead and keep killing people because we're not going to spend the money. Personally, I don't have a problem spending money to do that if we're going to have a major deterrent effect. We're looking at 48 that were of this category or class in Anchorage last year that were arrested. You can probably double that in the rest of the states. You're probably looking at 100 additional felons. And I think that 100 additional felons needs to be off the street. And that's maybe a difference in policy call between the two of us. But unfortunately, I don't think we should be driven, at least at this committee level, by the fiscal notes. I'm sure other people in finance will have great concerns about that when it arrives up there. Go right ahead.
And if I may respond to you, mm-hmm. is I don't believe that every crime in the state of Alaska should be just everybody put in jail, but perhaps that at times we should be looking at community services for some of these offenses. And if I got caught drinking, if I was a teenager and I'm first offense, and I should at least pick up trash on the streets or go paint a daycare center or something that's productive for a community versus just putting these human resources into cages. And that's where I'm coming from. But
anything further for Mr. Ambrose? If not, well, I think we have some other people to testify. Are there other people who wish to testify on this bill? Dell?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dell Smith. I'm Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety. I just want to state that as a public safety agency, we're supportive of the legislation that attempts to take repeat offenders and dangerous drivers off the roads. As to this, the bill, the addition of allowing the warrantless arrest of juveniles for minor consuming also is advantageous to law enforcement since that court decision. We realize there's a substantial fiscal impact, which is for you folks to iron out ultimately whether or not that's appropriate. The DPS note addresses some overtime that would be generated by court appearances and grand jury appearances in felony cases. I think it was $59,000 in the first year. We anticipate, based on our research regarding this bill, about 330 potential people for these charges on a yearly basis.
Questions? Senator Adams.
I have a list up here of Anchorage DWI repeaters in here. If this legislation passed, how many people would be put in jail under this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator,
I've got, you know, a list of.
My recollection is that it'd end up being about 100 based on the Department of Law's projections, and perhaps they can more adequately address that. But that's my recollection. Out of those 330, we might end up with 100 and something actually sentenced. And those are estimates of who we would be dealing with on a yearly basis. And state troopers, from DPS perspective, would be about half of that 330, I think, because Anchorage does approximately half of it.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Smith? Thank you, Mr. Smith. Margot Knuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Margot Knuth. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And if I might expand on Mr. Smith's information on projected number of prosecutions. Annually, there are over 300 people who have three or more DWI convictions within the last 5 years. And trying to look at the numbers here, there will be over 300 with convictions. And if we go back and look at the arrests figures, we would anticipate over 400 arrests to be made. And from that, 380 would be accepted for prosecution, go to grand jury, and then of those, 15% will go to trial. So for the Department of Law, this bill represents a substantial fiscal impact, because when you elevate a crime from a misdemeanor to a felony, you require that each case be presented to the grand jury. And you also obviously have increased the stakes for the defense, so that the number of cases that they will take to trial will probably double. We anticipate a total of 330 persons will be convicted under the law each year. And the Department of Law, with the Department of Public Safety, considers repeat DWI offenders to be a very dangerous group that needs to be addressed. The question is the fiscal impact, and in this case, for the Department of Law, it is a substantial impact. It's an even greater, it's almost a tenfold impact for the Department of Corrections. Where the money's going to come from is a very tough question. We've been looking at what other jurisdictions are doing with repeat offenders to try to address this problem, and I believe it's Minnesota, is now taking the license plates off of the vehicle at the time that the arrest is made. And this is a proposal that Alaska might well consider. One of the advantages that this has is that the government doesn't need to impound the vehicle. And what we're finding in Anchorage is that the municipality, when they impound vehicles from DWI cases, is ending up with a fleet of trashy cars that will cost more to dispose of than they're worth, and this is probably not particularly surprising for repeat DWI offenders that very likely no longer have new vehicles or vehicles that are worth very much money. When you take the plates off of the vehicle at the time of the arrest, what you are essentially doing is making the owner of that vehicle responsible for impounding it at their own home. A vehicle without plates cannot be on the streets. And then the question is, what does the person need to do to get those plates back? And that's an answer that the legislature could formulate. It could be that you need to go through treatment before you get those plates back. It could be you need to finish any of the conditions that are set out by the legislature. This is a possible alternative to going to the felony level. If the legislature wants to go to felony DWIs, the Department of Law has some concern about the sentences that are set out in the bill. We have a presumptive sentencing scheme in Alaska that says if it is your second Class C felony offense, the presumptive sentence ought to be 2 years, and for a third offense, it ought to be 3 years. And the sentences that are set out in the bill are less than that. It's a 360-day sentence, mandatory minimum. And in the case of driving with the revoked license, it's a 30-day mandatory minimum. In order to be convicted of that felony offense, it must be the person's second felony offense. Namely, they must have had a felony drunk driving on their record and then have gone out driving while their license was revoked for that felony. So that ought to be a 2-year presumptive sentence. And it may help the fiscal impact to just make it a 30-day mandatory minimum. But if a person believes in presumptive sentencing, there isn't any reason to accept these offenses from their effect there. And so it's a matter that the committee might wish to look at. The Department of Law very vigorously supports Section 1 of the bill allowing the warrantless arrest of minors for minor consuming. There are two other circumstances where warrantless arrests are allowed under the law. One of them is for misdemeanors. One is domestic violence, and the other is for driving while intoxicated. And in both of those cases, this exception to the general requirement of a warrant for a misdemeanor makes sense, because there's a special danger posed to the public with those offenses. In domestic violence, you want to intervene right away, take action to separate the parties, and handing a citation and leaving the people there is not going to solve the problem. Similarly, in drunk driving, you have somebody who is a known danger to the public and you want to remove them from the road. This public policy also applies for minor consuming. It's an instance where you want to intervene because oftentimes juveniles who are under the influence of alcohol are even more judgment impaired than adults under the influence of alcohol, and getting them off the street, releasing them back to their parents or to a responsible person definitely furthers their safety and the safety of the community. And that's an amendment that we very much need to see pass this year. If there are questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
The tear up the license plate idea, I'd asked about that about 4 years ago and kind of ran into a stone wall on it. Nobody seemed very interested in it at that time within the department. I've always liked the idea, but other states, you say, are utilizing it. How are they doing so? I mean, what do they do to get the license back if it's a borrowed vehicle, as an example?
Mr. Chairman, that particularly is the tough question. When it's not owned by the offender, I don't know, as I sit here now, what due process requires the owner of the vehicle be given the opportunity to get it back right away. And that is often the rubbing point in that type of sanction.
One of the things we looked at last year for the forfeiture and seizure of vehicles was whether or not the bank that was loaning the money on the vehicle we were going to forfeit, or some third party that may innocently own the vehicle that's now being used. What we were looking to then was whether or not there was knowledge on the part of the owner or the bank of the propensities of the person or of the previous convictions of the person for DWI before they either loaned the money or gave them keys to their car. Such might be a benefit in trying to determine whether or not we're dealing with innocent third-party victims whose cars are being used by drunk drivers, or someone who's participating in knowing full well the person has a history and a tendency to drive while drinking, and they're just providing him with a vehicle to do it. I think I'd like you to look into that for us, if you could, give us your recommendations on it. I'm not prepared to move the bill today anyhow until I've got a commitment that this thing isn't going to become a Christmas tree for everything from 0.08 to every other idea that might float around out there. So as a consequence, until I've got that commitment,
should we do anything to work on the penalties being consistent with the presumptive?
Yeah, you can. What would the impact be on your fiscal note if we took the penalties from 30 days to the presumptive that you're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, for the Department of Law, it would probably have little fiscal impact. For the Department of Corrections, it might double their note.
Go from $3 million to...
Six.
That's a guess.
I don't want to preclude the question, though. It's a valid question, but like Senator Adams says, you can only throw people in cages for so long, and then you've got to start taking a look at other options. Yes, Jones, you want to comment?
Yeah, Senator Taylor, just one comment. In the course of drafting the legislation, the penalties were seriously considered, and at your direction, they were set where they were to number one, try to get the message across, and to not be as punitive as would happen under the normal circumstances. Normally, someone who is repeatedly offending has a serious alcohol problem, and hopefully a mandatory year will give them some time to think about it and maybe seek some help. The 30-day thing, we've had situations, one in Wrangell, where the police, I mean, everybody knows everyone, and they see somebody go by, well, there goes so-and-so in somebody else's car, we know he hasn't got a license. Well, they stop him, and that stops him at that moment, but there's been no consequence. Again, I don't know how you approach getting the message out there, but as with everything that's alcohol-related that you've submitted this year, there is the forethought in every instance of some sort of intervention. And you don't get the message across to somebody that is a fifth, sixth, seventh time repeater without some cooling off time. And that is one of the reasons that things like the antabuse or other drugs are written into the bill.
Any further testimony from the audience? Okay, I'll hold that one until at least the next hearing.
Next year, you said?
Next hearing.
Oh, next year.
Yes.
My hearing's going bad.
We've been noticing that lately.
Senate Bill 14. An act relating to criminal mischief, which we used to call joyriding.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I understand that we have a new work version that we would like to adopt.
That we do.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the LECUP version O, dated 2/28/95, and as the new work version.
We're going to run out of alphabet.
It'll be double A.
Any objection?
I'm going to object till I hear from Margot. I think this CS tries to do what we tried to accomplish, to distinguish between juvenile and adults offenders, and if that's the case, then I will remove my objection. I think the CS gets to where we're going, where I wanted it to go, and I think with just a presentation on that, then I'll remove my objection.
Certainly. Margo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Margo Knut with the Department of Law, Criminal Division. And to answer the question, yes, O does get us where we want to be. And it does this by approaching it from a different angle than we had talked about at the last committee hearing, but it's the same finish line, and it's one that gives the state a great deal of flexibility in how to approach these joyriding offenses. The section, version O, is changing the sentencing provision in 484C, which is what makes it a felony offense for a second joyriding offense. And as you can see on line 5, this bill adds the language if the person is 18 years of age or older, so that you must be 18 or over before a repeat joyriding offense can become a felony under this section. There are two other ways that joyriding can be a felony offense. One is if more than $500 worth of damage is caused to the vehicle, and the other is if it's a police or other emergency vehicle. And those have not been impacted by this bill. And what that means is that if the prosecutor's office wants to put a kid through delinquency proceedings for a felony, that there's a special reason to do that, that charges could be pursued either under either of those sections if they apply. And there may be instances when that does seem appropriate, particularly a kid that has had problems before and you want detention, you want a monitoring going on for a longer period of time than you would have here. But most of the joyriding offenses, the principal concern is to deter the kid from doing it again and to get restitution for the owner. And this, I think, can be best accomplished in district court, where you have the formality of the proceedings, you have a judge there, you have a court's power of supervision for the probation. And so this version is having most of those, all of those offenses be a misdemeanor in district court for juveniles. And then I think the remaining sections, Section 2 is picking up a technical matter. I think it's an oversight on having left out the provision for taking a police car or other emergency vehicle. And this is a good opportunity just to fix that, so that somebody who's riding in this emergency vehicle, as well as the one who took it, have some criminal liability. And in this case, it's a, I think it's a Class B misdemeanor offense. Section 3 is allowing the revocation of driving privileges for these joyriding offenses. And again, We expect that to be a meaningful sanction for juveniles in particular, so this is a great step forward in trying to deter joyriding. Same thing in Section 4. It's specifying the length of time for these license revocations. And then Section 5 is the one that is putting the juveniles in district court on the misdemeanor joyriding offenses.
Further questions, Mr. Adams?
Now, in layman's language, is that even if I'm a juvenile and I go to district court, my first two offenses are misdemeanors?
That is correct.
And after that, it's a felony. If I'm an adult, my first time there is the misdemeanor. The second time is a felony, is that?
If I might clarify it. As long as you are a juvenile, if what you're charged with is regular joyriding, it will always be a misdemeanor. And it can only become a felony for the repeat offense after you turn 18. But if you cause more than $500 worth of damage to a car, or you take a police car or other emergency vehicle, you could be pursued on the felony charge through the juvenile delinquency proceedings. And that would not result in an adult conviction unless there was a waiver, which would be unlikely in that type of offense.
Okay, as an adult now, one misdemeanor, and then the second offense is a felony?
That's correct.
Thank you.
To give further clarification, go right ahead. You had another question.
With this CS of O, does it change the fiscal notes that we first started off with?
Through the chair, I am not certain whether fiscal notes were submitted for the original version. The original version was raising it to a felony, and there were significant fiscal impacts for law and then especially for corrections. And this version will produce much smaller fiscal impact, so it's a cheaper as well as more effective version.
You know, we went through many changes there, and the fiscal notes have law was zero, public safety was zero, corrections 88,500, and courts 4,600, and so that's just asking.
I think Juanita had some testimony on that too. I'll get to her in a second. As I understand it, however, and I think Senator Adams already said this, but I need to say it again for myself, I guess. The first offense by the juvenile is a misdemeanor. Second offense by the juvenile, under 18, is still a misdemeanor. I thought we had it that a second offense would be a felony and would have to be prosecuted or could be prosecuted as a juvenile.
Oh.
But it's only if he goes over 500 or steals a police car.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. And if a juvenile has one of these misdemeanor joyriding offenses and turns 18 and commits another joyriding offense, that one will be a felony.
Right.
So they don't get an extra...
They don't get an extra bite.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Any further questions for Margo? Juanita, did you have some comments on the fiscal note?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Juanita Hensley. I'm with the Division of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety. The original bill would not impact the Division of Motor Vehicles at all. This version will impact the division by the processing of the court revocation of a driver's license and the reinstatement of that driver's license revocation. So there will be a fiscal note submitted on version over this bill from the Division of Motor Vehicles. However, the revenue coming in will offset any operating costs that we have, because the fees for a driver's license and the reinstatement fees of the driver's license will offset any cost, and there will be a positive revenue generating bill that will even offset any of the charges, any of the operating expenses.
But we also should have lesser fiscal notes from the Department of Corrections because there will be major changes there. Mm-hmm. Jerry, did you have further statements you wish to make, or did anyone have any questions for the drafter that they wish to make of Jerry? Jerry Lockup's also here.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, Margo?
I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, if in restructuring this, if we've accidentally brought the juveniles back into the 3 days jail time, and 1255.135F says that a defendant convicted of criminal mischief in the third degree in violation of 484A2 shall be sentenced to a definite term of imprisonment of at least 72 hours, but not more than 1 year. And I wonder, perhaps Mr. Luckow could address this question, but I think now that we no longer have the separate number for the juvenile offense, that they are again going to be convicted under 484A2. And that would mean that they would have to do the 3 days unless we do something to take them out, which had been the intent at the last hearing.
Harry, did you wish to comment on that?
Well, we would, for the record, my name is Jerry Luckow.
Sit right there, it's fine. Yeah. Any place the mic will pick you up. They're pretty good mics now.
Okay. The committee dropped out bill sections 4 and 5 from the previous draft, and one of those was bringing, when we were creating a new offense just for juveniles, we were bringing that in to be consistent with all the other offenders that commit misdemeanor joyriding. And so they would get these 3 days. And we dropped out those sections, and we also dropped out a separate crime for juveniles. We have brought them back in to this 3 day provision, which the legislature enacted, I believe it was in 1991, this last year, that required everyone convicted of misdemeanor joyriding to serve at least 72 hours in jail. All but one of those days, all but one of those 3 days could be exchanged for community service. They are included in this. If it's the committee's intention to remove juveniles from the reach of this section, then I can draft, the committee could pass a conceptual amendment, and I can draft it so that 1255.135F would only apply to an offender who is at least 18 years of age at the time of the offense.
It's the pleasure of the committee. Existing law, the juvenile is charged as a juvenile, so he never sees jail time anyhow.
Mr. Chairman, if that amendment were made, all it would be doing is saying that it isn't a mandatory 3 days, and a judge could sentence the juvenile to some jail time, but it would be based on the circumstances of the particular offense that, and the juvenile's background that makes it appropriate. And for 14, 15, 16-year-olds, makes more sense to the state that it not be mandatory.
That's an optional language that the judge can impose?
Correct.
Okay.
I have no problem with it.
I think what the sense of the committee is, I'll state it and then correct me if I'm wrong, please, is that we would like that change to be drafted and put into the bill. Can that be done through a simple amendment at this time, or would it take an additional period of time?
Mr. Chairman, I understand that committee's sense of this, so if the committee were to adopt an amendment, this section would only apply to those offenders who are over the age of 18, the requirement of 3 days in jail, and you know, I can draft that in. I understand where the committee's going with this.
Okay. Also move.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Before we get to your motion, is let me remove my objection so we have the CS before us.
Right. Good okay. Idea.
I remove my objection.
Right. Objection having been removed, the work CS is before us, which is number O, lockup 22895. Senator Adams.
Now it's your motion.
I'll bring the motion then at this time
to adopt the
conceptual amendment which Mr. Lockup will draft for us in the final CS, in this CS, I should say, that these actions, or these sentences of 3 days currently written within the bill are removed and will only impact those over 18. Any objection to the motion? There being no objection, the motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anything further on this legislation? It was originally introduced as a simple bill to raise the penalties of all joyriding violations in the state from a criminal mischief 3, a Class A misdemeanor, to a criminal mischief 2, which was a Class C felony. The second joyriding conviction within 7 years would be raised from criminal mischief 2, a Class C felony, to criminal mischief 1, a Class B felony. But after the public testimony, the committee has found that more than 50% of the offenders were juveniles. The juveniles that were adjudicated through the juvenile system were not appearing in court and were not being treated. And that we were losing 50% of these cases to the system, where most of them were falling through the cracks. As a consequence, the committee's now redrafted this legislation in such a fashion that at least it will begin to address the juvenile difficulties, the 50% of those cases that were going basically untouched. And I think the committee's done a great job on making what I think is a pretty good piece of legislation out of this bill. And let's hope it works. Let's all pray that it works. There's nothing further. Chair, to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 14 as amended by this committee, with this conceptual amendment out of committee with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? There being no objection, so moved. From committee, SB 46, an act revising the provisions of law under which a minor may be charged, prosecuted, sentenced as adult in district court. Thank you, Chair. Margo, appreciate it. Jack, would you take the witness stand for a moment and give us a little background? We have previously heard this bill, haven't we? Yeah. And in the process, we came up with some amendments and some requests of you, and maybe you could bring the committee up to date as to where we are right now.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Jack Chino from the Legal Services Division. I was contacted by staff for the committee and asked to provide additional language that, in essence, modified the penalty for minors in two situations, as it turns out. One is the minor consuming statute, and the other had to do with minor in possession of tobacco. And that is what I've tried to do in the amendment that's headed A2 up in the upper right-hand corner. Is that the one that you have in front of you? So let me speak to that. The first two entries there through line 8 are changes to the title to reflect what's going on in the rest of the bill. New section 1, beginning at line 11, merely takes what is the minor, what is now the minor consumption of alcoholic beverages statute. It says that the normal penalty for a person convicted is as a Class A misdemeanor. This puts in an exception so that a person who is a minor, that is to say less than 18 years of age, who violates this provision is guilty of a violation. A violation is defined as something that for which only a monetary fine can be imposed of not more than $300, and the second sentence there sets a minimum fine of not less than $100 for those kinds of offenses. You can leave the minimum or take it out as you see fit. The second section adds 050B, the preceding, to the list of exceptions of offenses in the Alcoholic Beverage Code that are otherwise punishable as a Class A misdemeanor. Section 3 is there because I could not find anything that said that the district court had jurisdiction over a group of offenses called violations. And so I thought it would be wise to add it. The current law says that the district court has jurisdiction over misdemeanors unless otherwise provided, and it has jurisdiction over a violation of an ordinance of a political subdivision. But the state statutes contain a small group of offenses that are styled violations, and I can't see that we've ever said specifically that the district court has jurisdiction over them. They probably do as a derivative of misdemeanor, their authority over misdemeanors, but I wasn't about to rest my hat on that. So I added subsection or subparagraph C there to identify the two categories, the violation by a minor of the alcoholic consumption statute and the violation by a person under 19 years of age of the minor in possession of a tobacco statute. And then the material on lines 9 through 11 is technical. And finally, I caught on page 2 having reference to that minor in possession of tobacco statute, though that is the title of the crime. In point of fact, it isn't. The substance of the bill does not talk in terms of a minor. It talks about a person under the age of 19. So I've tried to conform the text there. Mm-hmm. I hope that, and then as I said, the title is conformed to pick up the new material. I hope that's where the committee wanted to go with this. In essence, two offenses would be treated as violations. One is the minor in the person under 19 years of age in possession of tobacco. That's already classified as a violation. And then by this bill, a minor, a person younger than 18 years of age, who is caught consuming liquor. Those would be treated as violations.
Questions, Mr. Senator Adams?
Thank you. Within this amendment, even though we impose a penalty or fine, a monetary fine, can the judge, instead of a monetary fine, also, or either both, sentence also community services?
I don't think a judge can. I think that the definition of violation, general definition of violation in Title 11, speaks only in terms of imposition of a monetary fine.
Well, my question is perhaps some of the juveniles in some parts of Alaska don't have that $100 bill or your fine may be, and that's what I'm getting to, is that also if they cannot pay what they're imposed on, then perhaps they can do community services. That's all I'm getting to.
I don't think that this amendment gets you there.
Margo, do you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there is a special sentencing statute that says that a judge may convert any fine into community work service, and it tells you what dollar rate to even use.
I was hoping you were digging for that, because I also remember that. In fact, I had not had any contact with this legislature until, as a judge, I was doing these sorts of things, and Judge Stewart, my presiding judge, called me up and he said, "That's illegal, you can't do that." And I said, "What do you mean I can't do that?" He says, "Well, it's nothing in the law says you can do it." So I did two things. I called up first my insurance agent and found out if I could get additional coverage for being sued for such a thing, and he said I could, and it would cost about $300. So I wrote him a check and sent it to him, and then I picked up the phone again and I called Bob Ziegler. I said, "I need to have this law changed. I'm doing something down here that apparently is illegal, and you got to make it legal." I think you'll find that law dates from just about that time, probably about 1978.
So I don't have to worry about that?
No, I think you're fine. I think we'll be okay.
Thank you. No further questions.
Any further questions of Mr. Chenoweth? I move adoption of amendment, I'll call it amendment number 1, Chenoweth 8.2. Any questions? Any discussion? Margo. Yes, please.
Thank you. For the record, Margo Knuth, Department of Law. First, there is indeed the statute, and it's 1255.055C. The court may offer a defendant convicted of an offense the option of performing community work service in lieu of a fine or a portion of a fine. If the court finds the defendant's unable to pay the fine, the value of community work in lieu of a fine is $3 per hour. So that is in there now.
Would you just read the statute one more time?
Sure.
55.
It's AS 1255.055 on community work, and it says in subsection C, the court may offer a defendant convicted of an offense the option of performing community work in lieu of a fine or a portion of a fine if the court finds that the defendant's unable to pay the fine. The value of community work in lieu of a fine is $3 per hour.
Thank you.
I don't think that contemplated inflation or minimum.
No. Actually, Mr. Chairman, I understand that they're using $5 an hour throughout the state, and I'm not sure what their basis is, and perhaps I should give them your insurance agent's name so we can give a call here. Mr. Chairman, when this bill was before the committee last, the state was actually contemplating something a little more than what Mr. Chenoweth has done here, and that was to make all minor consuming offenses a violation instead of a misdemeanor, and not just those that are committed by minors, that is, those who are under 18. And the reason for this is that I think I indicated 46% of our kids are drinking, have had a drink within the last 30 days between the ages of 12 and 17. If you go up to 21, unsurprisingly, the percentage gets higher. And because the cases have been Class A misdemeanor offenses, we are guessing that there are a lot of kids who aren't coming before the system at all because police officers and other people are making a determination that they don't want that big of a penalty or proceeding against the kid, and they're letting them go. And we believe that if it's reduced to a violation, that a much higher percentage of the offenders will be coming through the court system, and that that will give an opportunity for beginning intervention, screening, and a takeoff in terms of preventative type measures instead of punitive measures. And because I had been thinking along this way, I was surprised when this draft on line 12 says a person who is a minor who violates A, and I had been expecting a person who violates A of this section. And so I just bring this information to the committee's attention.
Margo, I guess that was my concern also, because I had thought we were just taking everybody from 21 on down, one fell swoop. Don't we end up with a broken class, so to speak? We end up with a class now that's 19 or below, and there's still a window in between that's going to be charged with a Class A.
Under this version, Mr. Chairman, yes, that is true. Yeah, and the state would prefer not to have that.
Otherwise, you end up having to get birth certificates or something from your people and figure out how old they were on the day the offense occurred as to whether or not they're going to find themselves in one category with a violation or in another category with up to a year in jail.
Correct.
Well, is there a simple way to correct that by merely
deleting is a minor who on line 12?
So if we took out line 12, the words is a minor
who?
Yeah, so it would read a person who violates.
Correct.
Okay.
And I guess on page 2, line 3, right now it says a minor.
Where's this A? Right here. No, where's this A?
Oh, where's A? It would be in the full section if you had the full bill in front of
you. Okay, that's what I was.
The bill in, would you look?
What A is the one that says right now.
It's above it and not printed because we weren't changing it.
Okay.
A person under the age of 21 years may not knowingly consume, possess, or control.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes.
Okay.
On page 2, line 3, instead of saying a minor, it could say a person. So you have an offense committed by a person that's a violation under 416.050B.
Okay, so that we would delete the word minor and insert in its place the word person, page 2, line 3. What about a person under 19?
Mr. Chairman, that one is referring to the tobacco possession, and that is what the offense is. Right. Right. I don't know if this...
Get yourself tobacco instead.
It just takes longer.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure whether this changes what the need to change the title. I just haven't looked at the title there. But
Jack's nodding that it would.
Because you got minor in line 5.
Jack, could you look at the title for a moment, see if there's if we can make it all in one amendment, we might as well.
The last part should be rewritten to say, amending the penalty applicable to persons under 20. under 21 years of age who possess control or consume alcoholic beverages.
The person under 21. What about in line 5? Person under 21?
No, that's the, no, line, oh, which one are you looking at?
Line 5.
Oh, the person, no, line 5, the person under 19 is referring to the tobacco thing again.
No, that's liquor.
Oh, that one. No, I was looking at line 6. You're right, line 5. That, you're right. That one has to come out too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if we took out, just took out a minor, both words, relating to possession, control, or.
Mm-mm.
Or am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, you are. Because you got an and in there.
I think the under 21 is necessary on both lines, 5 and 7. Otherwise, one's left only with the under 19 years of age.
So it would read to a person under 21 years of age?
Correct.
In possession?
And then in possession?
Control or consumption?
Oh, correct.
In possession, control, or consumption. And then the same phrase on line 7, deleting the word minors who, or no, just the word minors, and insert.
Correct. Person under 21 years of age.
Two persons under 21 years of age.
Who possess, control,
who possess or control.
Mr. Chairman, I hesitate to even touch on this, but I'm a little concerned about the jurisdiction of the district court for violations, that if we're going to, for the first time, acknowledge that the court has jurisdiction of these two violations, are we suggesting the court doesn't have jurisdiction over all those fish and game violations that it hears and all the other violations that, that we know are heard in district court? And it's a sleeping puppy that I just didn't want to see it get kicked very hard.
Well, we might want to let Mr. Halford bring that up with his violations. I don't know. I kind of agree with Jack. We need to say it sooner or later.
Sure.
Well, maybe this is just a starting point. We'll probably have to have some sort of generic, maybe a revisor's bill will come out of this saying that, of course, they have it, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Does everyone understand the amendments that we've been discussing to this amendment that was offered?
Would this be Amendment 3?
Well, let me withdraw, if you could, please, without objection, my original amendment. I would now, if there are no objections, that withdraw. I would now move that we adopt as an amendment Chenoweth A2 with the following amendments within it. Line 5, deleting the words minors and inserting person under 21 years of age in, and then it would read possession, control, or consumption. And then again on line 7, delete the word minors and insert the words persons under 21 years of age who possess, control, or consume. Then dropping down to line 12, delete the words is a minor who, so that the sentence would read a person who violates. And then going to page 2, deleting on line 3 the word minor and inserting the word person.
A minor that is a violation.
Wait a minute, that won't work.
It doesn't make sense.
I should say is in violation.
That is a, oh, I see. It's kept read C above. An offense committed by a person that is a violation under. Mm-hmm. Committed by a person. Ooh.
It is weird, isn't it?
Yes. I think that's a dangling participle or a split infinitive.
Chairman, I think we probably want to rewrite C just to say an offense, one, that is a violation under ASO 4-16050B, or two, that is a violation of AS 1176.5, because the terms of each of those two statutes set an upper age limit within them.
Yes. That would be cleaner. Will you assist the clerk on that so that we can just move this amendment and be done with it? Yeah, thank you. Because I doubt that you'd picked up on that one. You got it all? Well, you're quicker in writing than I am. That's why you got the job, see? If there's any further objection, any further discussion? Any objection to the amendment?
No.
No objection, the amendment is adopted. Anything further? Is there anyone who wishes to testify further on Bill 49, number 46? Senator Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 46 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations.
No objection. The bill moves from committee with individual recs. Do it as amended. That's fine. That's the way Mike moved it, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah, there's no reason for a CS. We'll just do the amendment on it. Knowing Arlock Jack, I'm getting played with again anyhow. Thank both of you for your help. Really appreciate it. Anything else to come before the committee? I guess that's it. We're adjourned.